Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. It's really good to see you all here. What I'm going to be doing now is an hour of sharing from my journal, The Seven Steps to Awakening, followed by an hour of meeting the five nominees to the Member Board of Trustees so that you all can place your votes this week. Votes need to be placed by July 6th, which is next Monday. So what I'm going to do first, just to, you know, bring in some stillness and some relaxation, is play a short song, a lovely song. This song is by an artist named Mike Scott, and it's called Open. Tonight, with the Seven Steps to Awakening, I'm going to begin with number 654. So I'm putting the link to number 654 in my journal in the room. I'm laughing. I'm noticing the typo, but it's a funny typo. It says, I'm open to experience that love HS has for men. And then it says, oh, me today. Yeah. All right, so I'm reading from Step 3 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. I'm reading from the Supreme Yoga within the Seven Steps to Awakening. And I'm going to read, quote, 654 from the Seven Steps to Awakening before we go and look at the journal. But it is the journal link that you have in the room. The mind is not but ideas and notions. The mind is not. But ideas and notions. So what that means is that even if there's a small space of time where we allow ourselves to be without ideas and notions, in that time we are also being without mind. You know, it's amazing because often people will say, you cannot be without mind. And I would suppose that that could be true depending on how you are defining mind. You know, once I looked up the word mind in the dictionary, and there were like 10 definitions, which means every time we use the word, we could be using it somewhat differently. And if we just accept this definition right now, the mind is not, but ideas and notions. What that really points to is the fact that we can practice being without mind. We can practice being without mind. In fact, what I will do is I will say that, let's say 5 times. But in between the 5 times that I say it, so we'll have 4 spaces. I'm going to pause just briefly, not long, but just briefly. Briefly enough that we can all experiment being without ideas and notions for a few seconds, 4 times in a row. Just a little space. And notice, you know, if you try this with me and therefore you spend those few seconds not thinking, just being, notice that you still are, you know. Notice that ideas and notions are not required for you to be, okay? So let's try this, shall we? The mind is not but ideas and notions. 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 So were you able to be in the seconds of those 4 spaces without thought? Without any ideas or notions, just presence? It seems to me that even the idea that I cannot be without ideas and notions is an idea. I remember, what year was it? I think it was 2011. I spent a lot of time watching Muji. I haven't watched him a lot since then, but I did in 2011. And I remember there were so many things that people would say to him when they were sitting in front of him. You know, they would say something and he would say, but that is just a thought. And then they'd say, yeah, but, and they'd say something else and he'd say, that is also just a thought. And then they'd say, yeah, but, and they'd say something else, and he'd say, that too is just a thought. I think that after 9 months, I think I started to get it. Why don't we look at the journal and see what the journal has to say about this? The mind is not but ideas and notions. So let's peek at the journal. The idea is that the mind is me. Me and my thoughts. This is not true. And the fact that this is not true can be seen. For just a moment, clear the mind of all thoughts. Begin with an intention, an inner awareness that the purpose of this moment is to realize what I am. Be still. No thought. Rest in awareness in the heart. Did you sense yourself, even for a moment? The mind is not what you are, not what I am. The mind is just thinking. I am the bold presence that is before mind and beyond mind, always present, not always noticed. Michael Langford has in his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, kind of an experiment that we can practice if we want to. He asks us to sit down and, you know, make a decision that for 2 hours, we are not going to think a single thought. And then after making that decision, close the eyes. And of course, if we're still very addicted to thought, we're going to find that we cannot sit 2 hours without thinking a thought. But if we are not addicted to thought, if we do not believe that thought is what I am, if I know who I am and know that thought is unnecessary, especially while I'm just sitting still with my eyes closed, there's no reason for thought in that moment. Not doing any kind of a job or anything like that. If I know all of this about who I am, well, then I can sit for 2 hours without thought. And if I practice that experiment and I find that I cannot sit for 2 hours without thought, that can be an indication. In fact, I would say that is an indication that I need to practice being without thought. You know, like, if the problem was alcohol addiction, or food addiction, or gambling addiction, wouldn't we say that one needs to find a way to be without alcohol, or you can't be without food, but be without the food habits, or be without the gambling. So isn't it helpful then just to take breaks and practice being without thought? And, you know, a person may ask, well, how can you practice being without thought? The thoughts just come. Well, the way the thought addiction happens is that the thoughts come, that's true, but then we give our attention to them. We believe them. We get caught up in them. So when you're practicing, the thoughts are going to come. But what you really practice is not giving your attention to them. In fact, one thing I notice in my practice is my attention may go to a thought and half of a sentence may be said, like, oh, don't forget tomorrow, you need to. And then the remembrance comes into my mind that I'm practicing now not listening to thought. And I turn my attention away from the thought, and the sentence does not even finish. And then I said again with a few moments of no thought, a few moments of just being aware, and then another thought comes. Some thoughts don't capture my attention at all. They just come and go. But then another thought may come that I may begin to listen to. My attention may go in that way. And then once again, I remember, I'm here practicing not being attracted to thoughts. And I don't even let the thought finish itself. I turn my attention away and the sentence is never finished. That's the practice. So it's not necessarily, in fact, it's not that we're stopping thoughts from coming in, because the thoughts just arrive. They're really arriving based on the fact that we are addicted to them. They come because we're going to feast on them. That's why they come. So what we're doing is breaking our addiction of giving attention when they come. I've talked to you guys before about hate thoughts. I mentioned that during the period of time that I was living with Laurent, there were a lot of hate thoughts. And Peggy, this is Regina Dawn Akers speaking live. The membership meeting starts in 45-ish minutes. Yeah, 40 minutes. Peggy, I'm glad to see you're in Pal Talk. That's good. So I've talked to you all before about hate thoughts, and I told you all that, you know, when Laurent was first living with me, there were lots and lots and lots of hate thoughts. In fact, now I can't even remember how many excuses my mind gave me for hating him. So many of those excuses have been forgotten. But there were many, many, many things. It seemed like everything my eyes landed on was an excuse to hate him. And at one point, I may have told you this story before, at one point we were actually in a Walmart. And one of the differences between Laurent and me, which ego was using as an excuse to hate him, and I think his ego was also using it as an excuse to hate me, right? It was a two-way street. But one of the differences that our egos were using was that I was very frugal. I was in a position at that time, especially where I had left my job in Boston. I'd moved to North Carolina. I'd been living in North Carolina by this time a couple of years. And I wasn't receiving any money. There were no donations coming in. I had no income of any kind. I was receiving zero money at this time. And watching my savings, every time I paid a bill or wrote a check, watching the savings go down, 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 down. And I'd been doing this for 2 years. And all of my money fears were not gone yet. So as you can imagine, what I'm trying to do is be very, very frugal. And when Laurent moved in with me, Laurent did not add money to the household. I was the sole supporter of the household. But Laurent had a belief that he needed to have the most expensive of everything. It had to be what he called special. You know, all food, all drink needed to be special, needed to be the most expensive. It was very important. It was a very strong value of his. It was very important that food and drink be special. And that means, again, expensive, the most expensive one. And for me, it was a very important value that we be frugal. You know, I didn't necessarily have to buy the cheapest one. I would buy the cheapest one if the cheapest one was a good quality. But if the cheapest one was a bad quality, what I would buy is what I called value. I would buy the cheapest one I could get with a reasonable quality, if that makes any sense. So I called that value. So value was my value. And special, expensive, was his value. And what this created was a lot of conflict when we would go grocery shopping together. And I remember one day we were in Walmart and we were buying butter, but we'd been walking through the aisles and his hand had been reaching for the most expensive of everything. And finally we get to this one point where we're buying butter, just butter. And he reaches for this butter that, you know, I don't know how expensive it was, but it was considerably more expensive than the butter I normally buy. His hand reaches out for this expensive butter. It's still just butter, like my butter was butter. And I lost it. I just lost it. There was so much hate in me. So much hate. I will tell you that in my lifetime, I never until that moment knew that I was capable of hating that much. There was so much hate in me just coming up. Murderous hate. That the only thing I could do was walk away. And I walked away. I left Laurent and Jasmine just standing there. I walked away. This particular Walmart in Albemarle, North Carolina had benches. I think people call them husband benches. I went to a husband bench. You know, I think it was in the video section of the store. And I just sat. And I just sat just looking at this enormous, enormous, enormous hate. And I don't know how long I was gone. I mean, Jasmine and Laurent finished the shopping. They took the car, the groceries out to the car. They still did not know where I was. They looked for me. They didn't find me. So they ended up coming back in and asking to have me paged. And I hear my name being paged. That was a beautiful day. It doesn't sound like it, but that was a beautiful day. A beautiful day. Because that was the day that I realized I did not want to tolerate hate anymore. You know, I think we heard Dove talk a little bit about this morning. To say you want the peace of God is nothing. To mean it is everything. And that is the day that I came to mean it. I wanted the peace of God more than a clean house. The peace of God more than a boyfriend who slept the same hours that I sleep. The peace of God more than value at the grocery store. The peace of God more than a well-mowed lawn. I mean, you know, whatever else, did I say the peace of God more than a clean house? Whatever else was there that I was being told were my excuses for hating, my value shifted. My value shifted from valuing value at the grocery store and valuing a clean house and all of these other things to valuing the peace of God. That's what happened when Laurent bought the expensive butter. And it was shortly after that that the message of the code came. And what the message of the code taught me was that when a hate thought comes into my mind and I believe it, I accept it as true, right? That I then send that hate thought out into the world and it's going to recycle and come back again. And so if I'm believing hundreds or thousands of hate thoughts a day, I'm going to continue to receive hundreds and thousands of hate thoughts a day. It's kind of like trying to run from a swarm of bumblebees that are attacking you. The bumblebees just follow, right? You can't really run from them. And the hate thoughts just follow. What I was also taught, though, was if a hate thought comes into my mind and I choose not to give it my attention, that hate thought will die. That hate thought will not be sent back out into the world, and that hate thought will not come back and be recycled. Now remember, I've got thousands and thousands of hate thoughts running now in a constant, constant cycle, like bumblebees attacking me. But if I can start not giving my attention to them and start letting them die, that swarm is going to become less and less and less until it slows. And finally, the swarm as a whole dies. Now, I was ready. I was really, really, really ready. I can't tell you all how ready I was for this practice. So I began practicing it. And some of you may have heard me tell you that I was actually guided to join a gym at the time, and what I did at the gym was I would run on the treadmill, and while I was running, these thoughts would come into my mind, and here's what I did. I'm jogging on the treadmill, and some thought comes into my mind telling me, you know, why I should hate Laurent. And I would look at that thought, and I would say, that is a hate thought. I am not interested in hate thoughts. I want the peace of God. And then keep right on jogging. And then another thought would come in. There's another hate thought. I am not interested in hate thoughts. I want the peace of God. And keep on jogging. And what was really interesting was the hate thoughts. Like if we went home and looked at the home situation in the house, the hate thoughts were pointing to things that were, quote, true in form. Like the hate thoughts were telling me, you know, to hate him because, you know, he's messy in the house. And he was messy in the house. Or hate him because he buys the most expensive things. And he did buy the most expensive things, or, you know, whatever. So I had to be willing to let go of the hate thought because I valued peace more than I valued change in the world. I had to want peace even if everything stayed the same. Peace really did have to be my highest goal. But what happened in an amazingly short period of time, because I practiced this very intensely, very vigilantly, was those hate thoughts did begin to slow. Instead of, I don't know, I mean, now I'm making up numbers because obviously I never counted them, but instead of, you know, 3,000 hate thoughts a day, and maybe it was more than that, I was down to 500 hate thoughts a day. And as I continued the practice, it continued to get reduced. And eventually, hate died. In fact, it died, I would say it died as a belief. You know, prior to this time, I would have thought there are things you just hate. Now I realize that's not true. You don't just hate anything. You only experience hate if you choose to give your attention to a hate thought. If you never give your attention to hate thoughts, you never experience hate because hate has no reality. It has no true foundation. Now the reason I'm telling you this story is because what this journal entry is saying, this 654 is really pointing to, is the fact that we can do the same thing with thinking, just thinking in general. If thinking is happening, thinking is coming into the mind, we're walking around, we're cleaning the house, or we're driving to the grocery store, or we're doing whatever, and thinking is coming to the mind, and we're giving all of our attention to that thinking, whatever it is, the thinking is going to keep coming. You know, it's going to keep coming. The thinking itself is a swarm of bees. It may not be as painful as hate thoughts, for example, or guilt thoughts, for example. But the truth is, all thinking is suffering at some level. It's not the same as the clarity of no thought. But if we keep listening to the thinking, when the thinking comes, the thinking's going to keep coming. So if we want to know, and again, we have to want this. That's just like I wanted the peace of God more than I wanted the hate thoughts. I would say we have to want the knowledge of ourself more than we want thinking. We have to want the knowledge of ourself and the being who we are, you know, the abiding as ourself, more than we want thinking. But if we can get to the point where we want to know ourselves more than we want to be lost in thought, we can start this exact same process that I used for hate to die. Just like hate dies, this addiction to thinking can die. This is what the masters are teaching us. Now, there are people who will tell you the mind never goes quiet. But there are masters who say it does. It does go quiet. And even though there still is action and there still is speaking, that action and that speaking is spontaneous arisal, rather than the result of thinking. Now, I don't know about you all. I really don't know about you all. But to me, that's very attractive. One reason that's very attractive is because I already have some taste of that. That has really always been the case for me when I teach. When I teach, there is no thinking. When I teach, every word that I say is completely spontaneous. There's speaking happening, but no thinking. And it's always been that way. In this case, you could call it a natural talent. Just like some athletes will explain the same thing. They call it being in the zone. Or some musicians will explain the same thing when they're playing music. And maybe even some cooks when they're cooking, and they're just grabbing spices or whatever and throwing it in. Same thing, right? So many of us have some kind of a skill, I don't know what you would call it, an opportunity. Some people do it while gardening, right? Many of us listening to music, some people when listening to music, they get so lost in the music, there's no thinking, right? Many of us have this opportunity where we naturally seem to experience these periods of no thinking. And so we know what these periods of no thinking are like. And we know that we could live our entire life like that, in that spontaneity, if we let go of our addiction to thinking. And we know also that we would be so free, because we know how free we feel when we are listening to music or gardening or teaching or painting or writing or whatever it is that we do from that spontaneity. We know the freedom of that, the joy of that. So to live our whole life in that spontaneity, we know would be heaven. It would be a joy. It would be magnificent. And so the question becomes, are we ready to break the addiction to thinking? Are we ready, for example, to set aside a certain amount of time every day to practice not giving attention to thought? Some people call it meditation, but I'm going to be more specific. A period of time where we sit and without doing anything else, practice not giving attention to thought. Instead, giving attention to isness, awareness, beingness. I am presence. And then, if you're like me, you can't sit all day. You do have to get up and move about. But are we willing to find a practice that we can live with while we're moving about that is going to continue to help us break the addiction to thinking? Whether that's the Buddhist practice of mindfulness, whether that's the surrender and mantra practice of the teachings of Inner Ramana, whether that's the loving all method of the direct means to eternal bliss, or some other practice. Are we willing to fill our time with the practice of letting go of being addicted to thinking? And find out what happens for ourselves. No more opinions. No more opinions of, you know what, I think you can live in this world without thinking, or you know what, I think you can't. You have to have thinking. How about if we just admit, you know what, I don't know yet, but I'm willing to give this a try and find out for myself. A real try. Not a, semi half an hour tomorrow and then I forget about it try, but a real try. And keep trying. And keep trying until I know the answer for myself. We're looking at the quote, "The mind is not but ideas and notions." And again, the journal entry says, "The idea is that the mind is me and my thoughts." This is not true. And the fact that this is not true can be seen. For just a moment, clear the mind of all thoughts. Begin with an intention. an inner awareness that the purpose of this moment is to realize what I am. Be still. No thought. Rest in awareness in the heart. Did you sense yourself even for a moment? The mind is not what you are, not what I am. The mind is just thinking. I am the bold presence that is before mind and beyond mind. Always present. Not always noticed. And with that said, let's scroll down to the bottom of this page and click on number 655. And I will read 655 from the Seven Steps to Awakening before we look at the journal entry. Reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. Reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. In the story I just told you, I told you that what happened when Laurent reached for the butter, the expensive butter, and all of that hate, this enormous amount of hate, to me beyond imaginable, just this enormous amount of hate. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if men have murdered daughters and the mother of the daughter did not hate as much as I hated that day when Laurent reached for the butter. It was just this enormous amount of hate. But I told you that was a beautiful day, because experiencing that much hate within me pushed me to the edge where I was now ready to let go of hate. I didn't want anything to do with hate. I just didn't. I was done. Done. I still had some practice in order to let go, but I was done with hate. I just had no desire for it anymore, which means before there was a desire for it. That's the funny thing. People would never say I desire hate. It's not like I desire chocolate desire. It's a little different. You don't sit around saying, oh, the hate is calling me. I want to go hate now. How can I hate? You know, like you do with Oreos or something. But there was a desire because I was hating. I must have been wanting it. And then what happened was I got to where I didn't want it, right? I didn't want it. And that's when I really began to practice to the point that I was able to let hate die. So, this particular quote says, reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. What that says to me is, if I am not as ready to let go of thinking, to practice letting go of thinking, as I was to let go of hate, it's because I'm still attracted to the world. I haven't got tired of the world yet. That's what that says to me. Listen to this. Reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. So if I'm still really listening to mind and I'm only willing to give a half-assed or quarter-assed attempt at letting go of thinking, that probably means it's because I'm still really attracted to the world. In fact, NTI says that. NTI tells us that we're attracted to the world, that we want the world. And it says the way we can tell that we want the world is by how much time we spend thinking about the world. You know, so how much time do I spend thinking about anybody or anything that's in the world? Whether it's myself or someone else, you know, my job, my sports team, the news, my children, you know, whatever we think about, all of these things represent the world. So if I'm really, really interested in these thoughts, it means that I'm really, really interested in the world. I haven't gotten to the point yet where I'm tired enough of the world that I'm really ready to let go of thinking. I have NTI here. NTI has a reinterpretation of the Beatitudes. Here's the second one. Blessed are those who have tired of this world, for they will be comforted. You hear that? Blessed are those who have tired of this world, for they will be comforted. Also, let's see, 1, 2, 3, the fourth one down says, blessed are those who seek truth above all else, for it will be given them. And isn't that what happened in the story with the hate and the peace? Didn't I finally decide I wanted peace above all else? I wanted peace more than a clean house. I wanted peace more than value at the grocery store. I wanted peace more than whatever other excuses I had for hating Laurent up until that point. I wanted peace more. This says, blessed are those who seek truth above all else, for it will be given them. So what these two Beatitudes are telling me is that I need to tire of the world. You know, if you imagine like a scale. Right now, if I'm addicted to my thoughts, what's happening on the scale is that my desire for the world is heavier, and my desire for truth is lighter. So the scale is tipped in favor of the world because I spend all of my time thinking about the world. Even if I'm thinking about how much I hate the world, I'm still spending all of my time thinking about the world. I'm still more interested in the world. Somehow what I need to do if I really want to know myself is I need to tip the scales. I need to begin to lose interest in the world, and I need to increase my desire for truth. And as that the scales tip to where I finally want truth more than the world, just like I finally wanted peace more than hate, then I will begin to really practice letting go of thinking. I will begin to set time aside where I can sit and do nothing but practice not giving attention to thought, giving attention to awareness, watching awareness, or the I am presence, or however that rings true for you, but giving my attention away from thought in the direction of truth, of self. I will really begin to do that when I start really wanting the truth more. And this kind of reminds me of the teaching I did on Sunday morning, not this last Sunday morning that I taught, because the last Sunday morning that I taught was the teaching of don't abdicate your authority, but the time before that I taught my May gathering. It was about increasing our intense desire for liberation or freedom or awakening, right? And in fact, Michael Langford really tells us that's the most important first step. Listen to those words. The most important first step is to increase our intense desire for liberation. You see, that will help tip the scales. Maybe it's helpful just to know what we need to do in order to ready ourselves to really want to lose interest in thinking. And maybe that's why I'm now setting time aside every day when I've never done it before, to sit in meditation. Because something in me has begun to really tire of the world. You know, you could argue, and I couldn't argue against you, that Regina has a very blessed life. She always has. She's had such a magnificent life. I had wonderful parents. You know, I hear stories about other people's parents and the things that your parents did to you. My parents did not do that to me. My parents were and are wonderful parents. I've never been rich, but I've always had enough money. I mean, there's just always been enough, you know, to do the things I most wanted to do, to have the things that I needed, and even have things I didn't need, you know. There's always been plenty. And I've traveled and still do all over the world. I have a wonderful daughter. My daughter is one of the easiest daughters a human being could have. My boyfriend is an incredibly easy boyfriend. I mean, you know, it's a great life. And so maybe because it was a great life, it took me a little longer to become tired of it. But what I've noticed lately is a growing tired. I've noticed, you know, I mean, my life is still my life and it's still unfolding in the way it does. You know, there's still lots of, you could call fun, lots of going places and doing things. But I've noticed that they don't interest me. I've noticed there's something in me that's just kind of, I would say, waiting for that script to die. The script that I know that I created of going lots of places and doing lots of things. I'm just waiting for it to kind of wind down now. It's no longer my salvation and I know it. And I also notice what I really want. Like if I was to tell you what I really want at the level of form, what makes my heart sing is the idea of being alone. Having more and more and more time alone. And that's starting to happen too in kind of funny ways. Win-win ways, I would call it. Nobody's losing. But you know, Jasmine's going away to university. That's a win for her. It's going to mean being more alone for me. Danielle just got a new job. She's going to be working 5 days a week, and she never has before. And I think it's a job she's going to like a lot better. So it's a win for her, and it's more alone for me, right? So things are beginning to shift. And what this shift is going to do, if I take advantage of it, that's what we have to pay attention to, is if I take advantage of it. But it's going to provide me with additional opportunity to practice letting go of thinking. The addiction to thinking, I'll call it. Reality is veiled by the mind. So if I'm listening to the mind, it means I'm really interested in the world. I really am. Let's admit it. In fact, maybe that's something we could do if we really want to start training ourselves. Maybe when we catch ourselves thinking, regardless of what we're thinking, in fact, I'll commit to doing this, and maybe some of you can join me in it. It sounds like a great idea to me. Whenever I catch myself thinking, regardless of what I'm thinking about, you know, just it could be any world story at all, I'll say, there's interest in the world again. Just point at it. Maybe if we start seeing it for what it is, instead of, you know, thinking it's thinking that has to happen, maybe if we just start seeing it for what it is, it will start helping us to lose interest in it. So again, you know, I'm doing dishes and I'm thinking about, it's hard for me to think of examples nowadays. Thinking about my dog, I guess, something about my dog. And then I go, there's thinking about the world again. And then I'm driving to the store and I find myself thinking about my daughter and my boyfriend. There's thinking about the world again. And then I'm doing something else and I'm thinking about Danielle and Shiloh. There's thinking about the world again. And then I'm doing something else and I'm thinking about work that needs to be done in my yard. There's thinking about the world again. You know, maybe if we just keep pointing it out, that alone, that shining that light on it, is going to help us lose interest. Especially if we realize that reality is veiled by the mind, by that thinking about the world. And if at the same time we're doing this, we're also doing whatever is helpful to each of us to increase our desire for truth, for liberation, for awakening, for reality. If I'm spending time increasing my desire for awakening in whatever way I find helpful, and I'm spending time really noticing, oh, there I am just thinking about the world again, maybe the two together will help move me, shift me, you know, like the butter shifted me, so that I'm ready to give more true vigilant attention to letting go of the habit of thinking. Reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. Reality is veiled by the mind and revealed when the mind ceases. What do I want? Let's look at the journal entry. Number 655. As the previous experiment showed, which was in 654, I am not thought. What I am must be, obviously, always present. Yet I am is not noticed when object thought is in focus. To know my true self, time must be given to I am. Not a little time, but time. Time itself must be given to this focus. By spending time resting with I am, not distracted by thought, time as an idea disappears. I'm going to read that again. As the previous experiment showed, I am not thought. What I am must be, obviously, always present. Yet, I am is not noticed when object thought is in focus. To know my true self, time must be given to I am. Not a little time, but time. Time itself must be given to this focus. By spending time resting with I am, not distracted by thought, time as an idea disappears. So there we go. Now we're clear. And it's kind of up to each of us what we want to do, but we're clear, I think, that we're either interested in the world or we're interested in letting go of the addiction to thought. We can't, it's not both at the same time. And if we're spending an hour a day letting go of attention to thought, but we're spending the other 15 waking hours giving attention to thought, we're probably going to progress fairly slowly. That's not what I did when I let go of hate. I did not spend only an hour a day, even though I talked about being on the treadmill. That wasn't the only time that I practiced letting go of hate. That was just a very, very focused time, just like sitting in meditation is a very, very focused time of turning attention away from thought. But I also practiced to the utmost of my ability constantly. I never forgot. See, I never forgot what I was doing. That's how bad I wanted it. I didn't like get distracted during the day and go totally into hate, forgetting that I wanted to let go of hate. I was so aware of my goal and I wanted it so bad that all of my time was given to it. Not only the concentrated time on the treadmill, but all of my time. And maybe that's why it actually disappeared fairly quickly, because I was so focused on it. And again, if we're not able to be that focused on it right now, you know, we may right now feel inspired and say, oh yeah, You know, I want to do this. I want to do this. But then we forget. See, I didn't forget with the hate. But if I'm forgetting with thinking in general, if I'm just forgetting, I'm not remembering in the same way to constantly give attention. Now I also know the reason I'm forgetting. The reason I'm forgetting is because I still want the world more than truth. That's why I'm forgetting. And so if I want to get to the point where I don't forget, like I didn't forget with hate, I need to start working on that cause of the forgetting. I need to decrease my desire for the world and increase my desire for truth. So either that is already done for me, I'm already ready, I'm as ready as Regina was when Laurent reached for the expensive butter. And I can start right now using all of my time to let go of giving attention to thinking. Or I'm not there yet. And if I'm not there yet, then what I can do is start giving my time to increasing my desire for truth while simultaneously losing interest in the world. That's something I can do. And with that said, what I'm going to do is play another song. This song will be a transition. And when I return from playing this song, we will begin our member meeting, which is when we get to meet our 5 nominees to the Member Board of Trustees. I think I'll play this song. I always play this song in part when I do a gathering, but I never play the whole song because it's a little long. But right now, I think I want to take a tiny break. So I'm going to play this long song. It's 7 minutes long. You guys all know it, I think. It's by Deva Pramel and Mitten. It's called Awakening.
Calling of the mystic awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love. Oh, this perfect imperfection, awakening in the oneness of it all, everybody, part of each other, sister and brother, rising in love. Shanti, 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 we are awakening.